Mini episode 612 of the FDH Lounge is brought to you by The Unheard Scene, your home for great music interviews of all stripes. Follow them on the web at unheardscene.com.
The FDH Lounge. You want to schedule your life around it.
A long time ago, on a gloomy, wet Cleveland spring night, two men stand alone amidst the late night drizzle. Their voices echo across the vacant station parking lot as they debate the merits of the great American radio show that have been missing for far too long. On that night, an idea was born. That idea became the FDH Lounge. Welcome to the FDH Lounge.
Welcome to mini episode 612 of the FDH Lounge. This is FDH managing partner Rick Morris here with another in our line of TV reviews. This is the latest in a series of reviews of critically acclaimed television shows that have completed their run and are available for streaming on either Hulu, Netflix, or Amazon Prime. We will not include spoilers in any of these reviews. The idea is to provide a sense of what you can expect if you decide to view the shows, and as such, we don't want to undermine that experience. Today, we're breaking down Fargo Season 1, a serialized drama that aired in 2014 on FX and can be found in its entirety on Hulu. Fargo has been greenlit for a second season starting October 12, 2015 on FX, but it will be a prequel that is only loosely connected to the original series, so each season essentially constitutes a separate story altogether. Here are the five most notable elements of the Fargo Season 1 franchise. Number 5. It channels the spirit of the Coen Brothers movie of the same name perfectly. The satchel of money that is buried in the snow toward the end of the movie is the narrative thread that loosely connects to this program, as it is recovered by a businessman who consolidates an empire with that capital. But the greater connection comes from a story that seemed to parallel the one from the film very effectively. A sad sack who commits a crime and finds himself in over his head because of the company that he kept. In this instance, it's insurance salesman Lester Nygaard who bumps into cynical criminal manipulator Lauren Malvo at the hospital in small-town Bemidji, Minnesota, in the pilot episode. Malvo, amused that Nygaard continues to suffer at the hands of his high school bully decades later, urges him to become a man with biting, savage prose. Later, Malvo takes it upon himself to off the bully personally, while Lester suffers one emasculating moment too many at the hands of his nut-cutting wife, and he snaps, killing her in brutal fashion. In a panic, he calls Malvo for help, but that just makes things worse. It turns out that Molly Salverson, a young policewoman, is investigating the murder of Lester's bully and has learned of the connection between Lester and Malvo. So Chief Vern Thurman volunteers to go talk to Lester, but before he stumbles on the wife's murder scene, Malvo creates a new one. The season progresses with a heartbroken Molly determined to prove a criminal link between Lester and Malvo, bringing her into the orbit of an out-of-town officer named Gus Grimley, who brings his own Malvo-flavored baggage to the case. Additionally, Lester has to deal with implications with his brother's family, and Malvo grapples with the ramifications of killing Lester's bully, who is himself a criminal connected to hitmen seeking vengeance. All the while, Malvo is helping that aforementioned businessman to gain an unfair upper hand and manipulating various people just for sport. There are a tremendous amount of narrative threads at play throughout these 10 episodes, but they tie up in logical fashion towards the end of the season. Number 4. Also like the movie, the series conveys a timelessness about life in the upper Midwest prairie. The movie is set in 1987 and the show in 2006, but there is much that remains constant in the look and feel of the respective stories. You've got the elements of small-town life, combined with the brutal effects of the worst of the winter climate. These ingredients for a story were around 100 years ago and will be around 100 years from now, regardless of how much the outside world is altered. Given the widespread fears before the airing of the pilot that the feel of the show would inevitably deviate from the movie, especially without any involvement by the Coen brothers, the ability to match the tone with a story set 19 years after the original is impressive indeed. Number 3. The show features one of the most startling and effective uses of a jump on the timeline in TV history. To discuss it in any way would certainly be a spoiler, but Fargo Season 1 takes the opportunity in one of its final episodes by showing something outside of the present timeline in a manner that is extremely shocking in the moment. However, it quickly becomes easy to see how the cut to another moment in time is useful for setting up the eventual end game, and that's exactly how it materializes. Number two, Fargo takes great advantage of how the anthology format allows for incredible casting. With TV once again serving as a magnet for top-flight actors and actresses who are less prone to see great critical roles as beneath them on the current landscape, the talent pool is widened. And this applies even more to programs that reset their stories after one season, such as American Horror Story, True Detective, and yes, Fargo. The decreased time commitment really opens up the possibilities in terms of casting. This show is a treat in terms of the presentation of top acting talent sinking their chops into a variety of colorful roles. As one of the leads, Billy Bob Thornton shines as Lorne Malvo, who is as close to a manifestation of the Prince of Darkness as you'll ever find on TV. His counterpart in crime, Lester, is inhabited by another great actor, Martin Freeman, who adds many layers to the pathetic punching bag. Colin Hanks brings a quiet dignity to the role of single dad and overmatched cop Gus Grimley, while the always awesome Bob Odenkirk absolutely kills it as befuddled police chief Bill Oswald. Adam Goldberg plays a very entertaining hitman. Glenn Howerton channels the craziness of It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia to play an overly tanned and overly enthusiastic personal trainer. One of the most versatile comic actors in the game, Stephen Root, is amazing in a cameo role as a dentist. Oliver Platt is wonderful as the ethnic businessman who parlays the money buried in the movie into a greater fortune. Key and Peele, yes, Key and Peele, are paired as a couple of entertaining federal agents hot on the trail of Malvo. And Kate Walsh is so very good as the preening hot widow of Lester's bully. In light of this collection of talent, which is by no means the complete listing of the terrific cast, it's incredibly noteworthy that the best performance of them all may have been notched by an actress of previous obscurity. Alison Tolman, predominantly a stage actress before Fargo, is almost perfect in her portrayal of Ernest Molly Salverson, the true protagonist of the story. Her efforts to piece together the chain of crimes committed are lonely and daunting, and the quiet courage and idealism that she transmits are made possible by master acting from Tolman. While the material is, of course, always important, the very best TV series are always able to leverage great actors and actresses to bring their stories to life. The initial season of Fargo serves as a model as to how to accomplish that. Number one, amazingly, the show doesn't suffer at all in comparison to the beloved movie of the same name. By telling a great story with the same narrative complexity of the movie and with the advantage of an unbelievable cast, Fargo demonstrated in season one that a similar tale formatted for TV could be successful even without the Coen brothers. This should whet the appetite greatly for season two, since the casting is every bit as off the charts this time around. Nick Offerman, Ted Danson, Gene Smart, Patrick Wilson, Kirsten Dunst, Jesse Plemons, Jeffrey Donovan, Brad Garrett, and Adam Arkin, among others. And just to top it off, in this prequel to season one that is built around a saga featuring Molly Salverson's dad Lou in 1979, we get to see a campaigning for President Ronald Reagan embodied by Bruce Campbell. That alone should be pretty epic. But none of it would be possible without the success of Season 1, which set the template for telling a complete story that ties very loosely either to the movie or to a subsequent season. Taken as a whole, the different manifestations of Fargo exist in a whimsical, frightening, but uplifting and entertaining universe. The franchise that was Season 1 proved that extending that universe was feasible, and it paved the way for more great stories to come. We recommend it highly. Thank you for tuning in to this mini-episode of the FDH Lounge.
As we bring the show to a close, we would like to extend our deepest gratitude to NBC, CBS, ABC, Fox, All Clear Channel affiliates, TNT, TBS, USA, UPN, Deadspin.com, YouTube.com, YTMND.com, MySpace.com, various blogs, Fox News, CNN, CNBC, MSNBC, IamBored.com, Billboard.com, Google.com, ESPN, ESPN2, ESPN News, ESPN Classic, NBA TV, NFL Network, Sports Timeout. Ohio, Athlon Magazine, Comedy Central, Cartoon Network, The Boomerang Channel, QVC, BET, The Spice Channel, Steno Notebooks, Manwich, Papermate Office Supplies, Waitresses, Strippers, Bartenders, Garbage Men, Janitors, Microwave Popcorn, The Writers of The Office, Scrubs, Entourage, My Name is Earl, Oz, Metalocalypse and the Boondocks, Awkwafina, and The Periodic Table of Elements.